Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle. They take care of it all. Make sure you're fully insured. And do everything they can to save you money. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Time now to bring in the great Hall of Famer, Ray Dittinger. Ray, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show today.
Nice to be with you, Steve.
All right. Your thoughts, you've watched Mahomes a lot, and you've covered the greats a lot. What makes him, in your opinion, when you look at the other greats, what makes him in that category in your mind?
Well, he's got, you know, he's got all the physical requisites. He's not as big as Manning and Brady, but he's big enough, and he doesn't have Brett Favre's cannon of an arm or Elway's, but his arm is strong enough. But what he's got is just an incredible intuitive sense of how to play the position and how to see the field. He's not a Michael Vick scrambler, but he moves well enough that he can make a play when he has to. But most of all, it's just his overall command of the game, the way he kind of controls the game, and the way he never gets flustered or frustrated this is three times now in Super Bowls that he's brought his team back from a double-digit deficit to win. Three times in the Super Bowl with all that pressure to bring a team, to rally a team, and to kind of figure out what's going on. If you're sluggish in the first quarter or the first half, kind of figure it out and then come out in the second half and make the adjustments. And the other thing that, you know, when you go back and you watch the film of him, the thing that jumps out at me is just his ability to see the field. I mean, to just kind of know where everybody is, to anticipate things. It helps a lot. It helps a lot that he has the kind of relationship and the kind of simpatico he's got with Kelce. Because when he's in trouble, he will look for Kelce. And the two of them have been playing together long enough that they always know where the other guy's going to be, and he always knows where he can find the hole, and he's going to be there on time, and he delivers the ball. But I think he's got tremendous physical skill. There's no question about that. But a lot of it is just his ability to be composed and poised and confident at times when the other guys on the field are not.
And you know Andy Reid so well in all of this. What makes, obviously Mahomes has great talent, but what makes the Reid Mahomes deal work since you know Andy so well?
Yeah, well, I mean, Andy's a great teacher of the quarterback position. And you look at the guys that he's had, you know, going all the way back to his days as an assistant in Green Bay. I mean, he's very, very responsible for the growth and maturation of Brett Favre. I mean, Mike Holmgren hired Andy and brought Andy in and sort of just made him and made him Brett Favre's big brother, you know. And Favre was a tough guy to coach early in his career because he was impulsive and he was impatient and, you know, he didn't always follow the script. And Andy taught him how to play the quarterback position well enough to win three MVPs. You know, and then he comes to Philadelphia and takes Donovan McNabb out of Syracuse, out of one kind of offense, and molds him into running his kind of offense and has great success with him. You know, and then he brings back Mike Vick at a time when everybody had written Michael Vick completely off, brings him out of, you know, having been away from the game, been in prison, brings him back to where he's NFL Player of the Year. And then, you know, then he goes, you know, and then he goes to Kansas City, has great success with Alex Smith, and then, but then really strikes gold with this kid, which is interesting because it seems like a long time ago now, but when he came out of Texas Tech, I mean, there was a very, very big split of opinion on Patrick Mahomes about how good he was and how good he could possibly be at the next level. I mean, he did not have great success in college. I mean, and part of that was Cliff Kingsbury was his coach, and so I think that was part of it. But, I mean, when he came out in the draft, I mean, there were some people that really liked him and thought that he could come to the NFL and be a big star, and there were other people that just thought he was kind of, you know, kind of a guy that played in this wild air raid kind of offense that, yeah, his numbers were what they were, but he doesn't really have the discipline or the patience to be a big player in the NFL. But Andy, you know, Andy didn't see any of that. I mean, Andy just saw a kid with tremendous promise, and he's, you know, he's coached him up to the point where now, well, there's no question he's the best quarterback in the NFL today. And at 28, I mean, there's no limit to how good he could become or how many, you know, how many accolades he could possibly win. I mean, people are now starting to say that, you know, maybe if everybody's assuming that Tom Brady's the greatest of all time, and he probably is it possible that at 28, you know, Patrick Mahomes could overtake him? It seems like a lot to say, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
All right. Now, the overtime rule has been in play for, I think, 28 games now. But none of the games went to overtime. So we hadn't seen it play out in the NFL. It's easy for me because I do college football. And I've announced a lot of overtime games. Okay.
Right.
And the rule is very simple. You always go on defense first. Now, I realize you're starting from the 25. The kicking game is not a part of it. There aren't any punts or kickoffs in the college game. But you always want to see what the other guy does first because you know you get a possession. Were you surprised by Kyle Shanahan's decision to win the toss and elect to take the ball?
I was. As you said, I kind of just anticipated that that's what he's going to do. And when they made the call, I was a little bit surprised. But then I heard Shanahan's explanation after the game, and it kind of made sense to me. In that, okay, if we get the ball and we score, and they get the ball and they match us, now the game becomes sudden death, and I want the ball. You know, if we score, they score, now it becomes a sudden death game, a true sudden death game. And in that case, I want the ball. And so that was his reasoning. And although it surprised me at the time, when I heard him explain it, I kind of understood.
Yeah, I understood to a point, except when you talk to you listen to the Kansas City people, if it was matching a touchdown, they were going to go for two. So,
right.
So it's like, okay, either way. What do you think of the state of the game right now, Ray? I mean, we just watched the Super Bowl. There was a lot of fun that went to overtime. What do you think about the state of it at this point?
I thought it was not a very good regular season. I think the game yesterday, to send it off with a great championship game, which that was, with a lot of drama and a lot of really good players and, you know, two big-time coaches going back and forth and overtime. I mean, it was a great finish. It was a game that I think everybody, except for the 49er fans, could walk away feeling pretty satisfied. But yeah, I look back over the regular season, and Steve, I got to be honest, I didn't think it was very good. I thought that there was a lot of spotty play. I thought that there were a lot of just flat out bad teams that resulted in bad games. And I thought maybe one of the biggest things of all, and this was consistent week in and week out, was the officiating was just terrible.
Yes.
I mean, the NFL officiating was just awful this year. And I know that people in Philadelphia are, you know, I mean, they're dismayed because their season unraveled and they crash and burned. But that's, you know, that's just a fan's perspective. I'm trying to take the bigger picture of what the overall health of the league was this year. And I didn't think it was very good. I thought the general level of play was not very good. But more than anything else, just week in and week out, I was just, the officiating was just so bad. I thought that it, I don't know what the league's going to do about it, but they certainly have to take a take a good hard look at it, because it hasn't been good for a while now, but I thought this year it might have been worse than it's ever been.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that is a huge problem that the league has right now. I'm not sure how to solve it, but the fans and the game deserve better than what they got from the officials this year. All the way through.
No question. And you know, a lot of it to me is, I mean, you look at the NFL rule book now, and it's 8 inches thick. And
right.
Every year they go in and they add more, they add more stuff to the rules. They add more nuance to it. They add more judgment. And I think it's just, making the game. The game was probably always hard to officiate, but the speed of it, but I think they've made it harder, because they're asking more of the officials now in terms of judging what somebody was thinking in certain plays. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how you do that. And it doesn't get any better. Like I say to people sometimes when we're talking about these things, I say, can anybody in this room tell me what a catch is?
Yes.
You know, raise your hand if anybody here can tell me what's a catch in the National Football League, because I don't know. It changes from crew to crew. It changes from week to week. And in a league where they throw the ball all the time, to me, that's one of the most frustrating things is that one basic idea, what's a catch, seems to just have the people of the NFL flummoxed, and no one seems to have an answer for it.
It's unbelievable. What about now? You and I both know that over-the-air television has been a critical component to the growth and success of the league, both financially and in viewership. They took the one playoff game between Miami and Kansas City, and it was Peacock exclusive. Next year it's going to be Amazon Prime exclusive. What do you think about what the NFL is thinking in that regard, considering what over-the-air TV has meant to the reasons they're at the point they're at right now?
Yeah, I hate it.
Yes,
I'm sure you're not surprised to hear me say that as somebody who is very much a traditionalist and an old schooler, and I make no apologies for that. But yeah, I thought it was I hated the idea, and I fear that we're going to go more down that road. I don't think we're going to stop. I don't think this was a one-off. You know, I think we're going to see it again. And if they get the kind of numbers and they generate the kind of revenue that they're hoping to generate, we're going to see it's going to grow. But you know, I just think that it is such a disservice to the NFL fans and the people that have supported this league and made this game what it is now, which is far and away the biggest game in this country, if not the world. You know, to now all of a sudden, now you're going to start charging people for something they've always had for free. I just think it's wrong. But I think that it is such a I hate to say this, but it is such a greedy institution,
yes.
The NFL. I mean, they just want to keep squeezing and squeezing and squeezing and squeezing to get more money, you know. And it sort of gets back to, I was talking to somebody the other day about, oh, the Eagles are going to play in São Paulo, Brazil. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, NFL's going to South America. And my response is, yeah, why? Why?
Right. That was going to be my next question.
Why are you taking your regular season opener, one of the Eagles' home games, by the way, and you're moving it to São Paulo, Brazil? That's progress? You know, to me, all the stuff that we've just talked about, Steve, all the issues with the league, especially the officiating, the fact that the replay thing has become just a boondoggle, that every time you do it, they say it's supposed to go fast and it just seems to go slower.
Right.
The idea that people can't describe anything as simple as what's a catch, nobody knows. I mean, all you got all of these issues with this game right now, and plus, you know, the issues with injuries and the complaints about the turf and the Players Association wants to get rid of our. You got all this stuff, real serious stuff about your game going on that really needs study and really needs to be resolved. And you're worried about, should we take games to Brazil? I think we should maybe take a couple more games to Germany. I think, you know, come on, do a better job with your game. Do a better job of serving your public. Do a better job serving the people who have built the NFL to what it is now. Don't worry about trying to sell T-shirts in Dusseldorf, okay?
Yes.
Just try and make your game better.
And that was going to be my next question, and you echoed everything I've thought. I mean, you're going to fly 9 hours to Sao Paulo. Now I realize, you know, it's the first game, so you can do that. But the fans of Philadelphia, their home game, helped make this league what it is in this country. They deserve to have the game in Philadelphia. That's me.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. But there's just so much avarice among the owners. I mean, they just at a certain point, it almost gets back to the Charlie Sheen question in the movie Wall Street. You know, how many speedboats can you water ski behind? How much is enough? If I had any role in the league office, if anybody's ear, that's what I would say. I would say just take care of your game. I mean, there's a lot that it's a great game, and you watch a game like yesterday, and you're reminded of just how great a game it is. But I mean, there are so many things that are wrong with it, and there are so many questions, and there's so many things about it that are unsatisfying on a weekend and week out basis. You know, work on curing those. Work on making your game as good as it can be for the benefit of the coaches and the players, and most of all the fans. You don't have to worry about trying to globalize your game, as Roger likes to keep saying. I mean, that's his big initiative. How about if your initiative is just making your game better? Make your game as good as it can be. I think that would be better for everybody.
Yeah, I know. I've got a basketball game at the end of the month at Iowa on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, which means everybody's getting back about 4, 4:30 in the morning. The running joke we have is, don't forget, it's all about the kids.
You're right. And to take that one step further, what's the one thing that Roger Goodell always says? I mean, always says whenever he gets near a microphone. I've heard him say it 1,000 times. It's all about our fans.
Yep.
It's all about our fans, is what he says. Well, if it's all about your fans, why are you putting games on pay-per-view? You know, right. If it's all about your fans, you know, I mean, it seems to be a basic contradiction here. I mean, it's an easy thing for him to say, and there's no question the league owes its fans a tremendous debt because they built the league into what it is right now. But if it's really all about the fans, then you're not going to be taking home games away from your fans, and you're not going to be asking TV, you're not going to be asking NFL fans to pay to see other games and playoff games. And, you know, do I think we're ever going to live to see the day where it'll be a pay-per-view Super Bowl? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that it will. I don't think it will ever go that far, but I can't tell you that it absolutely won't.
Right. No, because Amazon is going to pay, like Peacock did this year, NBC. They're paying $110 million for that game. Right?
Yep.
They're gladly taking the $110 million. They're gladly going over to Germany. They're gladly going over to England. Now they're going to go to Brazil. They're talking about some other game someplace else. And there's a triangle, Ray. Every time there's a labor dispute, you know that what do the players always say? Hey, without us, there's no game.
Exactly.
Well, you and I both know that without having an owner, there's no money, there's no game either. But here's the part of the triangle never anybody ever talks about. No fans, no game. Okay,
right.
You and I remember the WFL. No fans, no game.
Right. No question. I remember when there was one of those labor stoppages when the league actually did shut down. I don't know if it was 84 or 87. But I remember I was on some panel, and they were arguing back and forth. And, you know, the players were saying, we are the game. And the owners were saying, no, we are the game. And I said, you don't get it. The game is the game. The game
right.
is the game.
Yes.
You know, that's really what the people care about. And if they don't care, you know, the players come and go. I hate to say that, but it's true. And they don't really care a whit about the owners because they know they're just rich guys that are making more money.
Right.
What the fans love and what the fans keep coming back for and what really has been responsible for the growth of the league is the game. The game is so damn good. Well, yeah. You know, don't lose sight of that. But I fear that in the quest to build this thing into an even bigger money-making colossus than it is right now, that's all they're thinking about, is how can we make more money? Whereas I would be thinking about how can we make it a better game?
Right, because in the end, making it a better game will make you more money.
Oh, no question. Yeah. And you're dealing with other stuff, Steve, like, you know, I mean, you know, now they want to do two games on Monday night. And, you know, now they've got, you know, you got 1 o'clock games on Sunday, 4 o'clock games on Sunday, you got Sunday night games, you got Thursday night games, and late in the season you got doubleheaders on Saturday. And, you know, I mean, they're trying. I guarantee you there are people within the league that would love to see an NFL game on TV every night.
Yeah.
Every night. And they're trying to make the NFL into the NBA, and it's not. It's not. There's, you know, football, pro football isn't the same as pro basketball. It's the coaching. It's different. The playing is different for sure. But if they could do what the NBA does, which is have games on TV every night, they would do it. And would it hurt the product? Absolutely. Would it be tougher on your coaches? Absolutely. Would it be tougher on your players? No question. Yeah. The injuries would go up. But they don't care. If they can make money doing it, they'll try to do it.
This has been as fascinating a conversation as I could have asked for. Ray, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. That was terrific.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve. Always a pleasure talking to you. When you see my buddy Dick Girardi, tell him I said hi.
I will see him on Wednesday night, as a matter of fact. So we just got back
from Chicago yesterday. Tell DJ I said hello. He's one of my favorite guys.
Yeah, he's the best. Thank you so much. And I will, Ray. Thanks so much.
Okay. Take care, Steve. Bye-bye.